The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show on a Wednesday. So this is a football show, Conan, because we're talking about football rule changes. So we obviously saw the five proposals yesterday, and we're going to bring you a show to have a chat about them. So we have David Hassan coming up on the show very soon to maybe explain what the thinking behind some of the proposed rule changes are. Before we get into David, myself and Conan will probably run through them. But the one thing I noticed yesterday, Conan, is just Twitter and how polarised people's opinions are on this, how some people like to think up of the worst case scenario, some people like to think of the best case scenario, some people like to say the game is an awful mess, some people like to say the game's absolutely grand, why mess with it? Some people like to say these rules are brought in just to facilitate Dublin winning more All-Irelands because the GAA look after Dublin. Then you've other people coming in, this is going to ruin Dublin, this is brought in to make sure Dublin can't win yeah. All-Irelands. And it's like, holy shit, this is the worst, most toxic environment. Like, I made the mistake of tweeting about it, so did you, and just reading some of the replies. Some of these fellas replying to you having a notion, and they're complaining about stuff they just can't, they don't have it straight in their head, they're just complaining.
Are you talking about me here?
No, at least you had a thought process about what you were coming back with.
Yeah, like, it's funny you say best case and worst case, because we were arguing again in the office this morning. And
I'm glad we got that argument out of the way.
Wouldn't have been fit for air. Everybody in the office just goes quiet and we start bickering at each other. But yeah, like, because you call me doomsday scenario, but I'm sort of thinking your fairy tale scenario as well. Yeah.
And see, it's very unlike me to be so positive about things, because my natural character is to be kind of glass half empty, man.
But you, like, got a victory here with the offensive mark and with the hand pass rule. And
well, I have to say that the offensive mark, and we're going to get into them, that's absolutely my idea, and I'm 100% taking responsibility for that. Now, they called it the mark, so they've given a mark to the defender and the attacker, which I think have actually even improved that, because I wasn't given the mark to the defender, I was just giving it to the attacker. But obviously defenders would break the ball an awful lot, but now they have actually a chance of winning an important mark themselves. So I think that's actually moved on the offensive mark, and the mark in general, I think, is a great one. But we'll get into it in a minute. But I just actually wanted to say that the GAA deserve a bit of credit, because they are proactive on this. And whether you agree with the proposals or not, they're five new proposals, and they're designed for me to improve catching, improve kicking, and encourage more positive play. I think that's a good thing. You've John Horan talking about a B championship. So a lot of the things a lot of people are giving out about, make the game more positive, give it more teams something to play for, they're doing these things. And while I criticise the GAA an awful lot, like, they are a very slow organisation to change. So, like, I mean, even to think that they're doing this, I'm complaining about the B championship, saying just fix the whole year, but even just to get the B in, then it's just a slow process with the GAA. Like, I'm radical, I want it all fixed. It's probably never going to happen.
But this is the problem. This is my problem. Like, you're radical, and then I'm looking at these proposals going, fuck, these are very extreme. Like, it seemed a bit reckless. And as much as people give out about the game, and, you know, we complain on Twitter, and this is why you probably got two polarizing opinions, this is a very precious game. It's still, no matter what people say about it, it's the biggest sport in Ireland. Still trumps, like, two counties playing, still more people tune in, and, like, more
than the Irish national football,
Irish national
team,
football and rugby teams. And this is still the biggest. More people are playing now more than ever. It's too important to sort of be so reckless with it about it. And we're going to get into the proposals in a minute, but this is why then you have such sensitivity around it, because people still appreciate where it sits in Irish society.
We all love the game, there's no doubt about that. Like, I mean, but I think most people are in agreement that the game has gone not so attractive from a spectator's point of view. So this is obviously where we are now. So the situation is that the GAA Standing Committee on Playing Rules, the chairman of that is David Hassan. Hassan, who, like I said, will be coming up on the show soon, they've issued 5 new rule changes. So they're going to, these are just proposing these to experiment with Gaelic football. So now where the committee goes from here is they're going to engage in a consultation process in the next couple of months, and they're going to talk to managers, they're going to talk to officials, they're going to talk to referees, and they're going to get some feedback to them. So we could potentially maybe see little tinkers changes to them. I'm not too sure how that works, but they're going to get feedback. Then it's going to go forward to a management committee, and if they approve them, these rule changes are going to be trialled during the league in 2019. They're not going to be in the championship 2019. They're going to be trialled during the league. See which one works and see which ones don't work. Then the ones that people are happy with, they'll probably get more feedback from managers, see how it went, have a look at video, see what kind of the trends, whatever kind of happened. They will go to 2020 Congress and they will be voted in for the 2020 championship. So, like, I mean, anyone that's losing their minds about this, Jesus, this is too soon, there's going to be a lengthy process to see how these work in Gaelic football. So we might as well go through the proposals here now. So there's 5 of them. So we'll start with the mark, and I don't want to spend too long on this because we've talked about the mark. Like I said, when I like to brag, 3 years ago I was thinking about this even before the mark came into midfield. I think the success of the mark in midfield has maybe fast tracked this in that people were worried that the mark would slow the game down. It didn't.
He was
you were the doom and gloom doomsday scenario on that as well, and that I always have this in my locker when you think of more doomsday.
That was me just theorising what others will do.
But anyway, so the mark, obviously you kick it outside the 45, caught inside the 20 metre line. So, like, I mean, the thing about this is that when the forward catches the mark, he has 15 seconds for it to be taken. Now, 15 seconds is not a long period of time, because when you catch that mark, sometimes you'll fall on the ground. You know, there might be 2 or 3 seconds before you compose yourself, then you're standing over it. Pretty much have to kick it straight away. So we're not going to be seeing huge freak taking routines and all this owl nonsense. I think it's just going to be a case of get your mark, compose yourself, take a breath, and just try and tap it over the bar. The referee will determine that the player that takes the mark has been injured. This is one little issue with it, is that if a player, say, is not great on his left foot, catches the ball on that side, so he goes up for the mark, he comes down, he could put his hand up and say, I'm after hurting my hamstring. Yeah. And it's the nearest person to him then takes the mark. Now, having said that, again, this is the worst case scenario. You'll only really get away with doing that once. You know what I mean? If you continuously doing that, I can see a referee, do you know what I mean? Either saying you're not injured, you're obviously feigning injury if you're just putting your hand up. Like, it's a clear and obvious thing.
Yeah.
So that's the only potential problem there. Another potential issue people say is that it's too wide an area. You could be punting down into the corner for a mark, but again, what's the benefit of that? You won't kick it from the sideline there, you know what I mean? Probably not. Well, it's a very high risk.
Unless Dean Rock or Killian O'Connor catch it,
they could come across, but like, Killian O'Connor's missed easier ones than there, do you know that? Yeah. Kind of way. Unless, like, the worst case scenario is that people start taking marks in the corner, but what's the benefit? I don't see the benefit of it, whereas you could be giving good diagonal balls in and maybe catching it in a nice dangerous area. And I think in that scenario where you're catching it in a nice dangerous area where the major benefit is, well, then I think anyone can really tap it over the bar. Do you know what I mean? I don't think this feigning injury. The feigning injury is definitely one issue.
But they can also play away as well as the
they
other
can play
thing.
Away. Now,
the good thing about this is how many times have we saw, like, Aidan O'Shea going to full forward, any big man, Damien Comer, and there's almost like an unwritten rule where if they catch it, you're allowed to beat the shit out of them.
Yeah.
Like, you're allowed to go at them and they don't get freeze for it. And it's not fair and they're not rewarded for catching the ball, which is obviously a great skill. I do, I would sort of wonder, I don't want to reward people for a 25-metre punt down the line, but they should just play away in that scenario. So
they'll play away, so there's any benefit in doing it? I'm not too sure.
Like,
yeah.
So, like, this is fine. Like, let's try it out. Okay. Hey, I'm flexible.
We're trying that one out. That's fine, because we have talked about that. So all sidelines should be kicked forward. There's another one. So the exception to this is that, so this is the second one. So it'll be played forward from the direction of the kick. So basically, this is like when sidelines were taken when I was playing. I don't think I've ever taken a sideline backwards in my life. It just never would have even been in my head to kick it backwards, because usually the fellas backwards were being marked because they were marking someone, and it was like, why give it to someone being marked backwards when you give it instead of giving it to someone who's being marked forwards? But anyways, so the exception to this is a sideline inside the opponent's 13 metre line. So if it is inside the 13 metre line, you can kick it in any direction. So Conan, thoughts on this?
I think it's an unnecessary one. I think it's pretty silly. Like, again, like this stipulation that if you're inside the 13 metre line or on the 13 metre line, you can go back, but what if you're 15 metres out? You have to go forward then? Do you have to shoot from a sideline?
I think the optimum thing to do if you're 15 out is to try and go for a point. I don't think there's any kind of way around that.
From a sideline? Like, I just, like, we remember Morris Fitzgerald scoring. I know that was further out, but we remember that because it's so hard to do. Like, you know, yeah, you don't often see scores from that. So
no,
I don't think it's really thinking practically.
But a lot of players that get sidelines down that far take a go off it anyways. Like they do. If you're inside the 21 and it's a sideline ball, a lot of them are taking a shot from there, you know? So
yeah,
it's not, I don't see that as the end of the world. What I see a lot of these are going to be is outside of the left or right to someone and try and get an offensive mark. I think that's probably how, you know, where they're going to go with sidelines in that scenario, because there's a huge reward for giving a good diagonal ball and getting up there.
Yeah, there's just no reward either though for like a cross field ball, like if it doesn't go forward and the ref also has to decide. I'm just thinking about a club referee now as well, trying to decide, like rugby, did it go forward or sideways, you know? What if I just completely opened up the whole game straight across the pitch, but it was straight and yeah, it wasn't forward? Like,
I don't know. I think straight outside of the right and it curls a bit towards your side, I think would be okay. But I think, right, so the side, this is obviously designed, I think all of these are designed to force attacking play, positive play. Because to be fair, what's the percentage of sidelines now? I would say up to 89% are going backwards, and maybe backwards by 20 metres. So they're trying to rule this out of the game, because I think that's an abomination. And I do think this is very well intentioned. And again, each one of these individually, you can find problems with them. But if you wrap them all up together, and we might do that at the very end and sum them up, I think that they can work. If they can work all in unison together, whereas the positive, the sideline kicked forward, if you were just to bring that in on its own now into the current game, sure, it would be a bit of a farce because there wouldn't be enough men ahead of the ball. I think with the other potential rule changes, there will be more people ahead of the ball, and I think that the sideline kick going forward won't be a bad one. So I don't think this is one that's going to cause huge amount of debate.
I just think it's on this. There's 170 metres there along the side, like, you know, and sometimes playing it to the keeper, especially if it's Rory Began, is a better option. It gets the game going quicker and then he can be the quarterback, and
yeah,
I just think it's not that practical.
Right, okay, you're against that. I'm happy enough with that. Sin bin. So the sin bin is obviously replacing the black card. So it's the black card infraction, you go into the sin bin. If you get your second yellow card, which is a big one, that goes into the sin bin for 10 minutes. So like a subsequent black card will be penalised by another black card followed by a red. And if you get a third yellow, it's a red and you're off. So you get two yellows and you get the black card foul and you go into the sin bin for 10 minutes. Sin bin has its faults, but it's absolutely a huge upgrade on the black card penalty now, which is to go off and bring on a sub. So I would say sin bin is probably the most popular one that's going to come in.
Yeah, it's basically, we've been complaining before about cynical play in the last 5 minutes of games, where you're not punished, just drag them down, take the point and have 15 men still on. So this is a better punishment. I still think, again, there's a little issue there where, like, there's more of problems with the black card wording. Like, you know, why do you still have to drag someone to the ground? Pulling someone and they stay up should still be...
That's the issue.
That should still be a black card.
I think they could have tinkered with that, but I actually think the reaction to a referee getting a black card decision wrong now isn't going to be as extreme when the player's not, you know, when the penalty isn't as punitive. You know, like the emotive response of seeing Lee Keegan or somebody really big going off after 50 minutes of an All-Ireland final. Now he's going off from 15 minutes to 25 and he's back on. So I don't think there'll be huge talking points. Now, unless obviously his man scores a goal in that 10 minutes, then it'll become a talking point. It'll be less though. It'll be less emotive, and I don't think it will take up as much time debating whether it was
It'll
just end up being just another silly call from a ref, which there's so many of them in the game.
Well, that's it, because I don't mind, like, you know, I would rather the team go down to 14 men and handicap them for being cynical. Like, take your oil. Like, you know, you've lost a man now because of that. But the other thing is, refs need to be pressured more into using the black card is another issue with it. So again, that's not something the Football Review Committee are really going to go at, but
no,
the wording should be better.
Now, so we get to the two big ones here now. So the restriction of hand passes is the next one, and after three hand passes you must kick. So, like, I mean, this is going to cause most of the debate. I would, obviously, my idea on this is that this is trying to encourage teams to leave more players up the field, because without players up the field on your after your third hand pass, you won't have anybody to kick it to, right? So I favoured, instead of this restriction of hand passes, I favoured, and we spoke it on the last show, I favoured a restriction on how many players you can bring back. What I think this is doing, it's not restricting, because the restriction obviously has some downsides as well, in that four defenders are prohibited from attacking, so you lose that dynamic of offensive players. So if that came in, there'd be people giving out about that. This is what they've gone with. My idea of this is that they're trying to encourage four or five forwards to be left up, so that you'll have a kick pass to the half forward line, and then you might have a kick pass for an offensive mark, and it's trying to create more positive play. It's trying to obviously encourage the best skill in the whole game. I think, for me, this is obviously open to opinion, kicking for me is the greatest skill in Gaelic football. Inside of the boot, you can punt, you can go outside of the boot, you can spin it, you can do diagonal passes, you can go off left or right. It's just a beautiful thing. And what's great at the end of a kick pass is that the other great skill, I think, in the game is catching a ball at pace, over your head, into your chest, down at the ground, wherever it is. This is trying to encourage this. Yeah. So give me your thoughts on this. I know you're completely against this.
Yeah, like, listen, I love kick passing. This is why Jeremy Connolly and Enda Muldoon are my favourite players in the last 20 years. Like, I love kick passing as well, but I do think hand pass is a very fundamental part of Gaelic football.
They're giving you three. It would be different if they were ruling it out. They're giving you three. They're giving you three. So you're going one hand pass, two hand pass, three hand pass. Really should be enough to get you out of trouble and then look for a kick pass. Like, I mean, it should be enough.
Yeah, but, like, you know, it's just, again, practically, if the third hand pass and the guy's under pressure, he should just be allowed to pop it back, but he can't. He has to get away and try and kick it somewhere, end up with a hoof downfield. I think this is rewarding teams as well who are defending, like, because they'll have a packed defence. Like, say you're playing against Dublin, who are hand passing around for a reason because you've got a lot of bodies back, but now you're telling them you have to kick it after three. So it's almost like you would just sit there and let them hand pass around, knowing that they have to kick after three, and they're probably going to find it a lot harder to get in them because they have to kick it.
Yeah. See, that, and that's fair enough. And I do agree that if you wanted to continue with ultra defensive system, it's much more difficult for the attacking team to get through, knowing that I have to kick pass it on every fourth go. I absolutely accept that. I do think that if you want to have that system, you might not even get out of your own half against Dublin. If you want to use the Dublin example, because how will you get out of your own half when Dublin are pressing you, and how difficult it is on a press with a hand pass? With a kick pass, it's virtually impossible. So I think that managers are going to have to say, right, well, I'm over this team now. I favour the defensive system. Right, I can get some joy out of that. But what do I do when I have the ball? And I genuinely think that there is no way, and you throw the offensive mark and the forward sidelines having to go forward, it's literally impossible to have to play that system of that many men back. Because obviously defending is half your responsibility, but attacking is the other half. And I think you've got no attacking game. You've none having to kick the ball. Yeah. If you've nobody ahead of the ball, how can you attack at pace? You can't attack at pace. It's impossible.
Like, yeah, and the reason I use Dublin as an example, I think this is one where it does seem like they're being punished. It's not a rule to punish Dublin, but they will be sort of indirectly punished a little bit because they're hand passing in response to what they're seeing. So I think the problem is blanket defences, and Dublin are responding to that by keeping the ball.
Yeah, but blanket defences attacking game is based around hand passing. Yeah. So they're going to be punished on that. Do you know what I mean? So there's a flip side. But if you think of the defensive side, which you are, there's a flip side which is equally 50-50% equal So you're thinking of the benefits of one, but they're absolutely giving you no attacking game plan at all.
So my problem is, like, I don't think that game plan has a benefit anyway now. Like, the defensive thing, like, I think you have to be able to attack. That's why I've been giving out, you know, about Mahara felt that time. You have to attack to win games. And, like, people just say, we'll defend. They don't really care about the score. And then they just say, we'll transition.
Because, they have that hand-passing transition.
I think you could still do that against everybody but Dublin, because Dublin are so aggressive and so physical. Like, they can follow you all around the pitch. I think if you look at Tyrone Roscommon, there's space to transition. Like, you know, the pitch is massive. You can still do a 5-yard kick pass if you wanted.
We're not agreeing on this, and we didn't agree with it in the office. You think that you can basically get loads of men back behind the ball. Now, we haven't factored in the new kick pass or the new kick out rule either.
Oh, don't
start. On every kick out, we might as well bring this in here, because on every kick out, every team has to have 6 backs, 6 forwards inside the 45 on both ends, with 2 midfielders on either team in the middle of the field. So the amount of kickouts there are during a game, you have to reset, right, for every single kickout, and bring all your forwards back up the other end of the field, and bring all your defenders into there in the field. So the potential for teams to be bringing all their men back behind the ball, you add in the kick pass, you add in the forward sidelines, these defensive systems will not be possible under all these restrictions, because you can't get all your men back and the ball goes out for a kick out.
Within reason.
So we'll read out this new kick out rule. So for a kick out, only 2 players from each team will be positioned between the two 45s. So 6 defenders and 6 attackers have to be inside both sets of 45s. The ball from the kick out will have to travel beyond the 45 metre line before being played by a player on the defending team. Other rules relating to kick out remain unchanged. So now, the penalties. So basically, everyone has to wait inside the 45. Do you know what I compare this to? The throw-in at the start of a game. So you're stuck in behind the 45s. The minute the ball thrown in, half-forwards, half-backs can light in under the breaks, right? So this is what's going to be like for kick-outs. So this is why I think defensive systems won't be possible when you add all these in together. So you're going to have a situation, so you're both reset back into a kind of a traditional shape. The ball's kicked, bang, your half back line, half forward will still be getting out under these breaks. Now, I do take your point that it's a huge area there, but if you want to kick it out just beyond the 45, for example, so say a goalkeeper's just giving it to the wings and someone's running onto it, by the time that ball hits the ground, the half back line, half forward line will be in on top of you anyway. To actually be able to get a fetch that the half back line, half forward line haven't got out to, you're going to have to give it a good flight. You know what I mean? You're going to have to get a good bit out there. And even when you do get it out there, the defenders and the backs can challenge for it. It has to be a contest between the two midfielders. So, like, I mean, again, I'm thinking of all the good things that can happen with this. And I do take your point, and a lot of people saying that it will only end up with 2 kind of wing backs there running to either wing. But I don't think so, because, like, I mean, if it's close enough to run to the wing, which is the easiest kick out, by the time you get that ball in your hand, you'll be you know what I mean? There will be people around you. But if you want to get it to an area that they might not be able to get out, you know, under the break, then, like, I mean, that's going to have to be a big kick. So I think traditional midfielders will be contesting these balls. I think when the ball is kicked out, there will be fetching, and I think there will be breaking ball, and there'll be loads around looking for the break. And the great thing about it is none of the players coming out can actually intercept this ball. So it's 2-on-2 out there, and go and win it.
I think, like, this, if you're looking for traditional shape, like, I hate this rule, by the way, but if you're looking for traditional shape, this rule doesn't need the hand passing rule then, because I think what will happen with this, like, the keeper's 13 metres out for every kick out. They can all kick it about 60 metres at county level at least. So they can kick it to the 70 metre mark or whatever. I think if you have any decent team, if you have fast enough wing backs, as we say, in that middle area, it's too big, so you should win the kick out.
But
if you're
going to the 70 on the other side, then the half backs and the half forwards from the other side will be out on top of you as well.
Again,
do you know what I mean?
They're all marking a mat. Like, you know, that's 6 feet,
I know,
6
the
in
half,
there.
The half forward line will be abandoning their man and getting out under the break. That's fact. So the defenders, it's like, I've played wing back all my life. You know this in this dynamic. The half back can either follow them out under break or can hold their position. All that stays. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I don't think
you could ever lose a kick out though from this. So I think traditional shape will just be there anyway, but I think it'll just be like hurling. You'll kick it out, you'll win the kick out and then you'll have a shot every time because it'll be too easy. It'll be 7v7 going the other way then. Like, you'll just run onto the ball and then you'll automatically be in attack where your six forwards are being marked by six defenders.
Yeah.
And it'll just be non-stop.
I don't know. I think that, like, I mean, if you look at it and say you play Carl O'Connell out in midfield, yeah, and like, he'd be the obvious one that'll win a race out to the sideline. So he might win on your kick out. But if Dublin play Brian Fenton, Fenton's going to destroy O'Connell on his kick out. So I think
that's what I mean. You'll win the kick. Every team should win their kick out.
Yeah, but no team, any team wants. Okay, so here's my question. Does Brian Fenton have a better chance standing on the outside of Carl O'Connell, for example? Or who has the better chance? I'd still back Fenton to win his aerial duels and contest with Carl O'Connell on the ground rather than the other way around. Do you get me?
So like, yeah, no, I do.
I think you won't. I don't think it'll be a case where Carl O'Connell's will be used. I think it'll be a case where Feely's, where Fenton's, where these new modern midfielders, Parsons, they can both run to the wings and they can fetch, because without having both of those in your armoury, you're only going to get screwed on the other. Do you get me? I think that just that modern midfielder is what's going to be used in there.
Yeah, but when you have 56 metres by 88, is it like in that space between the 245, why would you want to fetch? You shouldn't have to on your kick out. So,
but this is the thing though, like, this is the thing. So you're telling me, and this is the point I'm making, so if, say, if you're not going as far as midfield, right, so say you just want to go 40, so it's 45 the lads are waiting on. So say you want to go 50. So Carl O'Connell's breaking down to a 50-metre ball. He wins it. He's running into two wing forwards on the other side. You're not getting a great benefit out of that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, but like, you wouldn't go that short. Like, the space is massive. Like,
yeah.
You would just go into space.
But this is the thing. If it's that massive and you have to go a good bit further than that 50-metre mark, there has to be enough hang time on it that they're getting out there as well. Do you get me? So the further you go, the more hang time on the kick out, the better opportunity these to have for them. Because wait and you see, it'll be like a throw in. They'll be lined up on the 45, ready to get out there. Now, this is a sprint. You look at a throw in, they're out there already. The minute that ball is broken down from a throw in, they're out there. So they're going to be out there from kick outs. The only way to actually get it past them is to put a good flight on the ball, win your midfield mark. And then they'll leave you alone. You see, you're forgetting about the midfield mark then as well.
But the middle of that area, in Crewe Park anyway, is 44 metres from the next line. So from the next 45 metre line, there's 44 metres into the middle of it. And then another 44 metres. So that's a long way for people to come. And then the halfbacks on the other side won't risk it because they're marking a man. So if I was Dublin, you would have McCaffrey and Merchant just running into space and win the ball. And then, like, just off the back of it, like, when you come down to club level, what if you can't kick at 45 metres? Like, what if there's a big wind?
That's the big issue. That would be an issue for me, that at club level there's a big wind and the goalkeeper can't get out past 45. I think in that scenario where the ball's being held up, it's being blown back, the midfielders can still come through and catch it and it just can't be touched until they catch the ball. I think there has to be a bit of leeway, and we'll ask David about that.
Like,
you know,
leeway, but that's not the rule. You know, like, is it a rule or is there leeway?
Like, well, it's not. There's still what's going to happen, regardless if it doesn't quite make the 45, is that the two midfielders have to be the ones that have to contest this, right? So, like, I mean, the defenders and the forwards have to leave it until it's actually contested between two people. I think that's the principle behind it. So there's obviously penalties. There's penalties relating to this. So for any player on the team taking a kick out before it has travelled outside the 45 metre line or has been played by an opposing player. Right, so that's if anybody touches it before it gets out there. So you cancel the kick out or the throw in, or there's a throw in on the defender's 20 metre line in front of the scoring space. Then for a player who crosses the 45 metre line before the kick out is kicked, or for a player, in the opinion of the referee, deliberately trying to seek a delay in the kick out but not retreating behind the 45 in a timely manner. Penalty for the two of them are a 45 metre free off the ground in front of the scoring space should be awarded. And then if two players simultaneously cross the 45 metre line, a back and a forward at the same time, well, then there's a throw in awarded at the centre of the 45 metre line. So they have a lot of people, they have a lot of stuff covered, because the main thing I was concerned about was the time wasting. That, right, well, we're not back set, we're not back in position, and, like, I mean, that's clearly a foul that, you know, is punishable by a 45 metre free off the ground. So if you're trying to labour getting back there, again, and that's an important element of keeping the traditional structure, because if you have all your men back defending and there's a kick out, they literally have to get a sprint back into position. Like, do you really want your team doing that? Then the kick out is, and kick out's there, and does your team start drifting and then sprinting back? It's just like, I mean, I think this is again encouraging teams to leave the majority of the players in a traditional shape, or else, you know, they have to do it at every reset. There's no question about it. You add this, which I think this kick out is going to keep a traditional structure. Now, I'm being very positive about this because I actually think
it will change midfielders overnight, like the type of.
I don't think so, because I think Owen Merchant is just going to be such a liability on the opposition's kick outs. You're going to give away too many marks,
because he'll be marking another whip. It doesn't matter. Like, the whippets will win the ball. He'll win the kick out all the time.
But why, if you've got Merchant in midfield, O'Connor, surely to God you put David Moran on him, so he's going to struggle with Merchant off the ground. Merchant probably won't win marks.
But then David Moran won't win any the other way. Like,
David Moran destroys Merchants with long kickouts close to the opposition's goal. What does Merchant destroy David Moran?
It runs 100 metres
off to the sideline.
Runs up the pitch uncontested.
With Moran on goal side of him. So Moran
won't keep up with Merchant running up the sideline.
Listen to me. So if Merchant is sprint to the sideline for these kickouts, and Moran knows exactly right, well, I'm not going to even chase him out there. I'm going to sprint diagonally and stop him off before he gets to goal. What can Merchant do to Moran on the other side? He can do nothing, really. He's just going to concede.
That's my problem. Like, so either way, you'll win your kickout. You will win your kickout either way, if your keeper can get it beyond the 45.
But Moran will win kickouts.
I know.
In a much more offensive place than Merchant will, because Merchant can only win it from the sideline. Moran can literally win it nearly on the opposition's 45 with a mark.
Merchant could also stand on the sideline and run into the middle. He could run over the top.
Moran will just stay there.
Yeah, like, but then, I mean, it's one on one in this massive area.
Yeah,
do you know?
I can see the point you're making. But I think by picking a tiny little fella, you're losing. While you might gain on one side, you'll lose out too much on the other side, because you lose out to good fetches with marks a good bit down the field.
But yeah, this is, like I'm saying, both teams will always win the kickouts. That's what I'm saying. And I think from a kickout, you should always get a shot away, because you'll always win it and you'll have space to run into. Like, this is the problem.
Because, like I said, that David Moran can let Merchant off to the wing, but can stay goal side of him. That's the way it'll work.
Merchant would just take it past him, or, you know, he'll have a lot of space to pick out one of his six forwards here.
And he'll move it on with a kick pass, which I'd be perfectly fine with.
But that'll be football then. It'll just be kick it out, win it, kick, like, you know. Yeah. And there's no.
That's your opinion is that, because we disagree on this. Your opinion is that teams will pick tiny little men. My opinion is that you lose too much by picking a tiny man. That because most managers will say, yes, we want to win our kick out, but we also want to be able to contest theirs. A tiny little man can maybe win your own, but you actually can contest there. So what I can see is the modern midfielder, like the Feelys, like a Daniel Flynn might go out there, like a Fenton, obviously, like Michael Darren McCauley. I still see all these modern midfielders who can do a bit of both.
But how are they more offensive than if Merchant wins it? Like, they just caught it, then Merchant can just tackle them, push them back, foul them.
Mark.
Yeah, but then the game stops. Merchant can run the ball and then run on into space.
No, you're not understanding, because, like, I mean, if Fenton catches a mark, right, and if David Moran catches a mark and Merchant has to back off him, he's a free kick in.
Yeah.
If Merchant catches it, now he's getting this right in the centre of goals, so he can pick out a lovely offensive mark, no problem, because he's that far down the field. If Merchant gets it, the only way Merchant gets it is by whipping out towards the sideline, because if he starts in the middle,
anywhere, he could, like, 2v2 in this massive area.
But anyways, can you see Merchant getting the ball without David Moran on goal side of him? It's impossible. He can't.
Yeah, I can see him winning it and then just running past David Moore. I'm saying either way. So if you have Moore and Merchant, like, Kerry will win all the kickouts, Dublin will win all the kickouts, so every single kickout will just be win. It will just be won by the team who kick it out, and then they'll get it a shot away.
Personally, I think that both teams can win their kickouts. Merchant winning it with his running game won't be in as an offensive position as catching a mark way further down the field. That's my point on it. And we've gone definitely too far on that, because we're clearly not understanding. I'm glad we got that row in the office out of the way, because that was on the hand passing one. Imagine if we continued that one.
Started banging your head off the table.
Right, well, we've talked enough about it anyways, Conan, and you're actually down. I'm positive about all five of them. You're positive about the sin bin and the offensive mark.
I can make my peace with two of them. I think all five have problems. I think three are embarrassing.
Well, there's not one going to find no problems with. Let's be honest about this now. There's no one going to universally agree, and judging by the responses yesterday, there is not a rule change like, some people don't want any rule changes. Never mind, like, they're going to find fault with everything.
It's Gaelic football.
I can find potential fault with some of them, but I'm positive enough about all of them, and if they all get in together, that this can really improve the game. And I think, regardless, managers are going to take a step back and go, right, how is this going to work on both the defensive and offensive side? And I think that they'll all choose the more positive one. I hope to do. Again, I'm positive enough about it that these should all be trialled, and they'll all be trialled in the league. And I'll be the first one to hold my hands up and say, shit, that didn't work. That was a bit of it. That turned the game, like, whatever point you're making about it. But for a league in 2019, I think the game needs this. I think the catch and kicking offensive side of the game, right now it's all about defences. It's all about hand passing. I think we'd agree on that.
Yes, absolutely.
Defences and hand passing are dominating Gaelic football. The majority of supporters don't like it. This is trying to remedy that. Now, there's obviously, people aren't going to agree on whether they're the perfect fixes for them, but why not just get a look and see? And if they're not, then sure, they won't get through, because nobody wants to see a farcical doomsday scenario that some people are imagining. Yeah. If that doomsday scenario arises, Jesus Christ, you will say, here, listen, that's clearly stupid and got that one wrong, or whatever.
It's just too big and too good of a sport to just be so reckless with these rules changes. I don't think he just plucks a hundred of your arse and just say, let's try this for
I
the crack.
How, come on, Conor, they didn't pluck it out of arse. Wait and you say, David will be on now in a minute. Will you tell him he plucked it out of his arse?
I would, because this isn't good enough.
He clearly had meetings about this, several meetings.
They've lifted Joe Brawley's article from 2 years ago, literally, for that kick out one, and that's the exact same rule that he proposed 2 years ago. Joe Brawley came on the charm offensive on Monday and started saying that these guys are going to do great work, and suddenly on Tuesday we've got rule changes.
Conan, give me a break. Are you telling me that they read something Joe Brawley said on a Monday and they actually decided to change all the rule
I'm
changes?
I'm just telling you the pattern.
No, that's just silly what you're after saying there. Right, come here, we'll come back with David Hassan next.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens and it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show didn't look great. There was maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering if he had the same match as me. He was kind of making out terrible, but unlucky to lose. Like, let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50%
pain, and 100% reason to remember the name. All right, delighted to say chairman of the Standing Committee on Playing Rules, David Hassan, joins us on the line now. David, how's it going?
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Colm. All good, yeah.
I'd say your phone has been hopping today.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I suppose we realised as soon as the consultation process would begin, which began yesterday, that would, I suppose, inevitably bring into the sort of public realm or public interest, you know, what those proposals were from the committee. So in order for the consultation to take place with the players and the managers and the referees and a range of other people, that, as I say, that would require us to publish what our proposals were. So it's a topic of conversation, has been for some considerable period of time, and with that, you know, it was inevitable that people would want to know a bit more about them. So there's been a lot of interest.
Just give us an idea of how many hours went into coming up with these, or how many meetings you had, you know, how long it took.
So we started back just late March, as you know, a new Dáil took up position, and it actually coincided with the appointment of Tom Ryan. So it was a slight delay, but it was late March, early April, and since then we've been working pretty much, it would be wrong to say non-stop, but it's been a fairly intensive piece of work over the last 6-7 months. So in total we've had 5 meetings. We'll have another meeting now in a few weeks' time, just to consider the feedback that we'll have received from the proposals. But yeah, it's been a big commitment, and you'll also know the composition of the pay. It's people like Brian Cox, Bantry County managers, people like David Collins, who, you know, the president of the TPA, Seamus Kenny. So we've had a good mix of both, you know, managers, players, officials, and everything. So yeah, they've done a sterling bit of work. You know,
just yes, because on the committee, because some people will complain about the fact that there's some hurling people, exclusively hurling people, you know, like Frank Murphy, and like without turning the hurling snob into football snobbery, like they wouldn't know one end of a football from the other. So how their input is like on playing rules for football?
Well, I mean, you know, the reality is that there's you know, the committee is obliged to consider both hurling and football. So, and the fact that it exists for a period of 3 years during the period of the lockdown. So whilst the focus has obviously been on football this year, there has been some discussion also about hurling, and particularly in the area of the hand pass, and particularly in terms of, you know, we're recognising aspects of some might refer to sort of cynical play emerging within hurling. It referred to sort of the pinning of the free hand, that type of thing. So I think it's entirely appropriate that we have people from hurling as well. And I suppose the nature of the two games is that people have a reasonable interest in both, even if on the face of it they're tied to one of those, you know.
Right, okay. So now we'll go through the five proposals here, and we'll actually focus on the two most radical ones, if you want. And I suppose that's open to interpretation. But for me, the three hand pass and the kick out one are probably the ones that are the most radical. So we'll start with the three hand passes, and maybe my talk is through what you're kind of thinking there. Obviously, it's to encourage more kick passing, but what else would you have been discussing?
Sure. So that's pretty straightforward, in the sense that, you know, all the evidence, and this dates back actually 8 seasons of inter-county action, so this actually takes it back as far as 2011. If you look at all the data around hand passing, in particular what people refer to as the chain of hand passing, so that's a number of consecutive hand passes, let's say, in any particular movement, the evidence is actually pretty clear on that. So if, for instance, you decided, as some people have said, both after the publication of the proposal, but certainly before it, that we should really take a strong stand in relation to the hand pass and reduce it to 2. If we reduced it to 2 hand passes, then you would actually cut the number of chains of hand passes that people would see in the matches by 40%. So again, it depended to what extent you thought that we needed to take a particularly strong position on that. Now, if you cut it to 3, as the proposal would be, 3 consecutive hand passes, and then you must do something with the ball, kick it or take a shot at goal or whatever that might be, you actually reduce it by about 30%. So I mean, the considered view, let's say, of both the data and also what we're, you know, having reviewed the video, etc., would be that, you know, 3 consecutive hand passes would make a sufficient inroad into that, you know, issue regarding hand passes without being unduly restrictive. And so that's the other issue that the committee are very much mindful of, and what I've seen and read about in various articles, both before and since, this notion that, you know, it's an unnatural process, that it's simply restricting hand passes won't have the impact that, you know, people would like to see in the game, and in particular for forwards, you know, let's say coming in on goal, to come up against a congestion the defence, people say we need the hand pass in order to, you know, overcome that, etc. So it was about really trying to strike a balance in relation to that. So, you know, we're proposing 3, but you're right to say that, you know, there'll be a range of views regarding everything from the 2 hand passes to, you know, that we shouldn't do anything at all about. You know?
Yeah. So, like, I mean, obviously, Cara Finn scored a brilliant hand passing goal in last year's All Ireland Club final. I think there was maybe 6 hand passes. So, like, are you looking, like, look, my theory on this is that maybe that's a necessary evil. You don't often see that many brilliant goals in that. Like, is it almost like you're losing that, which is not ideal, but the benefit you get out of, you know, preventing these never ending hand pass sequences? The benefits outweigh the disadvantages.
It is, and we would also say that at the very least it's worthy of experimentation to see, because, you know, what it will require, and we recognise this as coaches and managers and of course players in particular, and that's why we want to speak to the players, is to maybe change the way that they use the hand pass. So at the moment there's the, you know, and again I've read people who, you know, perhaps know to a great extent regarding the actual coaching the game, particularly at the inter-county level. I've read people who say that, you know, the increase in hand passing has actually led to a situation where players are, you know, unconsciously laying off the ball, so they don't even need to think anymore when they receive the ball.
Yeah.
So, you know, restricting the number of hand passes will require them to think, you know, both as a team and as an individual in terms of how they actually use the ball. So there's that, and also inevitably there had to be discussion about the use of the hand pass in a team's own half, this sort of lateral hand passing, this sort of hand passing that doesn't seem to be going anywhere. We understand that that's a, and it's, you know, it's been made, the points we've made repeatedly, that that may well be a response to the sort of blanket defence that people refer to, that, you know, you're not just going to aimlessly kick the ball away. But by the same token, you know, we had to try and strike a balance between what was seen by many people as the sort of key issue, the overuse of the hand pass. I mean, you know, Tom, the figures regarding the use of the hand pass in this year's All-Ireland final, it was up at 75% of all passes were made with the hand. And, you know, eventually it came to a point where people said, well, you know, we really need to do something about this. In order to try and keep a sort of balanced approach to how the ball is distributed.
Yeah.
So all of those factors considered.
Yeah. Your fellow county man Conan Doherty here was making the point, we were having a bit of a debate about it. He was making the point that defensive teams will still go defensive and they'll actually be rewarded, in that some team like Dublin actually has to kick it on the third one, and they'll actually the defensive team will actually benefit from that.
Mm. I can't understand that argument, but I mean, I would come back to the point I've made in terms of teams then having to be more creative about how they use a sequence of hand passing. So for instance, rather than, you know, up until now using a hand pass to get to a particular position on the field, they might use a kick pass that keeps the availability of the three hand passes, you know, alive, if you want to use that term. So we recognise that point, and, you know, again, just on the balance of where you're at around a lot of these things, then you make a judgment call that, you know, a team would be able to negotiate the use of three hand passes. Two would probably, in fairness, be a little bit too tight for them. So it's just, we recognise it'll be a challenge for teams to adapt to that, but we think that maybe the greater good, certainly in terms of reducing the number of consecutive hand passing chains, is probably worth that, you know.
Yeah. Well, I was saying to Conan, I don't know whether you discussed this, that, like, I mean, if you are dropping that many men back, you've got no real attacking game yourself if you do win it, because you'll have nobody ahead of the ball. So, like, I mean, the fact that you have to kick it on after every three hand passes, are you hoping that will encourage teams to leave more forwards up the field, that they have an attacking game plan, you know, they have an option for a forward ball when they do win it?
Absolutely, yeah. And again, it's, I suppose what people may term like an unintended consequence of that has to be that if I'm in receipt of that third hand pass, then I know that the only way I can release the ball is with a kick. And whilst, you know, that will require adaptation for teams, they're going to have somebody who can receive that kick, as you say, probably in a forward position. I mean, again, if the general principle is we want the ball to be going forward, if we want almost the narrative, the discussion regarding Gaelic football to shift more to an offensive attacking type discussion rather than a defensive one, well, if that's the outcome of that, intended or otherwise, that's a good thing, we would argue, you know.
Yeah, no, exactly right. So the other one was the kick out. Now the kick out, obviously, well, we were talking about this, that the kick out keeping a traditional structure on the game might also discourage the really defensive systems, because if you're trying to play a defensive system and then the ball goes out, all your players have to run back down. Do they have a certain mm-hmm. amount of time to get back reset into their defensive and attacking kind of structure before the goal kick is going to go out, or is it up to referee's discretion?
Yeah, well, it's the second one, but we did quite a bit of you know, timing around this issue. So let's say what people would understand as a more traditional kick out, in other words, you know, the goalkeeper retrieves the ball or gets the ball thrown to them, they go out and they set the ball down, they sort of survey what's available, etc., etc., etc. All of that takes about 30 to 35 seconds there. But now, we're not talking about the, you know, the short kick out, which is obviously much less than that. That's down around 8, 9, 10 seconds. But let's say if we were to take a traditional kick out, well, then obviously the players that would take up those orthodox positions, or what people best understand is just the positions players take up at the start of a game, or at after the start of the second half, then they have that time to get into those positions. But in terms of the actual rule, what we're saying is that it's up to the referee's discretion to decide whether or not there's a deliberate time wasting, you know, act taking place. In other words, you know, people stopping the kick out taking place because they're deliberately seeking to waste time. So we had to make provision for that. I mean, we have to be realistic that some teams may wish to do that. We'd prefer if they didn't, but if they did want to do it, then we've got that provision and the rule for that,
you know? Yeah, to discourage that. The other one Conan made, probably his strongest point of the whole podcast, was that it's an absolutely huge area to cover between the 2:45s for just two sets of two, that it actually won't encourage fetching. It will encourage fast, more nippier players to be able to break to the wings. That you're, I know the rule change is intended to encourage more fetching and contested one-on-one battles aerially, but what will actually happen is that you will just see players starting in the middle and breaking to the wings, an Owen Merchant, for example, or a Carl O'Connell, some really fast wing back, and we'll see actually less fetching.
Yeah, well, what do we say about that is, you know, we'd recognise that there probably now will be a challenge for all teams to consider what they do in that middle area, in the sense that, you know, I had read, you know, quite a number of people who have been promoting this idea, this sort of rule amendment, you know, a range of different formats, saying that not until such time as the, you know, one of the four players in the middle section actually plays the ball can the players then, you know, leave the 45, you know, break through the 45. What we're proposing is, let's say, a more realistic response to that, which is that as soon as the ball is kicked, so the goalkeeper takes the kick out, then they can cross the 45. So that's the first thing.
Similar to the throw-in at the start of a game.
Yeah, exactly. And the other point to make is that we have the mark already in place for the high fielding. Some people, again, would argue that that's helped with the high fielding. We're not seeing anything like what we used to see, let's say, in the past, but we're seeing some degree of that. But I think you're right in saying that, again, might promote faster players break, as you say, breaking into the sort of, you know, wing area to take it, to take a kick out. But I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because immediately they're on the attack, they have six forwards in front of them to play the ball to. But also, we recognise as a committee that there is a sort of growing trend over the last couple of seasons for a goalkeeper to kick the ball out to an on-line halfback. We've seen a number of teams, you know, like, for example, Rory Began and Mullins, particularly at that. But obviously, Stephen Cluxton's very good at exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
And we didn't want to prevent that, because, again, that's an immediate transition into the forward line. So, I mean, in summary, what we'd say is that it's not just about trying to promote more high fielding in the middle of the field. We have a provision regarding the mark for that.
It's more attacking play.
But more creative use of that space, you know.
Right, okay, yeah. Actually, the one jumps to my mind is Stephen Cluxton to Jack McCaffrey in the All-Ireland final. Was it for one of those goals? Yeah. So, like, that's it. The thing about it is that because it's such a huge area to cover, did you even consider maybe allowing two sets of three, have six players in there, so that, like, there's a lot of ground to cover for those two midfielders inside that area, and we know how many kickouts there are in a game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's an argument. I suppose what we were trying to do was move towards that more orthodox 6v6 in both of those positions. I mean, it's much like all of these. Like, I would argue that if we trial this and looks at some degree of amendment might be required in relation to that lineup, then, you know, certainly that's what the whole consultation process and experimentation is about.
Yeah.
But by the same token, you know, I think it's a good place to start, and let's see how it goes. I actually think those teams that say that it arguably might be a bit restrictive might find, if their goalkeeper is particularly adept at, you know, finding a running player in that section, they might find it's actually a very good thing, you know.
Yeah, no, that's interesting, because me and Conan were kind of arguing over and back here, and you're saying that it's not even a bad thing if that happens, that it's still an offensive weapon to have a fast man in there and move and just get attacks going forwards in front of them, and it'll create a better spectacle. One issue that we both agreed on here was the poor club intermediate goalkeeper playing against the wind, and it's going to hang up there and start blowing back around the 45. What happens in a scenario like that?
Yeah, I mean, we recognise that and we discussed that. The reality is that we don't have any provision at the moment for that. The only thing is that that we do have a penalty in place of a defender, for example. The penalty wouldn't apply to an attacker, incidentally. But we do have a penalty in place if the defender was to play the ball under those circumstances. So, the short answer to that is we recognise that as potentially an issue in a very isolated situation, but we don't, as in order to gain some degree of practicality around the rule, we don't have a provision at the moment for that. But we recognise potentially in very isolated issues that might arise.
That might arise. And is it like obviously a case that if that's arising and it's landing in around the 45 and one of the midfielders comes through, fetches it, comes in over the far, comes, you know, just catches it the other side of 45, is that up to a referee's discretion that every effort has been made there to get it out past and it just didn't? And, you know, it's up to a referee being smart and saying that goalie really attempted to get that out there, it's a windy day, it was caught inside the 45. Is that like a going to be a play on kind of thing maybe, or is that just a referee having to use his own brain?
In all of these things, there has to be discretion. I mean, it's discretion at the moment to a large extent to referee. I mean, I wouldn't want to give the impression that there is a degree of discretion regarding that rule. We're just saying that our proposal at the moment is that the ball would have to clear the 45-metre line. If it doesn't, then there's a penalty. So, I suppose to some extent that's what the feedback's about. People say that's unduly harsh on, as you say, maybe some goalkeepers might struggle to do that, then it might be a case where we have to make provision about that, but at the moment we're not envisaging having to do anything about that. Yeah.
Okay, right, the other ones then, just to quickly move through them, the mark. I talked about this a good few years ago, but I was talking about the offensive mark, but you're giving defenders a mark as well, which is a really important thing to do for me, so it will encourage them not to spoil every time and actually maybe try and catch it themselves.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, everyone will know that we already have the mark in Gaelic football. So all we're doing now is recognising the fact that two elements of sort of really important skills in Gaelic football that people listening to the show would be familiar with maybe from 15, 20 years ago, which was the ability to kick the ball over slightly longer distances, so 30 to 40, maybe even longer, 40 metres or so. To do that, people generally speaking seem to see that as an important element to the game, and in particular a clean catch from that kick. We wanted to recognise that, and so that's really where what people would refer to as the offensive mark has come from. But you're right, we also wanted to reward and incentivise defenders not simply to break the ball away, but if they caught the ball cleanly, that they could avail of that mark as well. And just to tackle another issue, just Tom, in relation to that, which is people say this will lead to 6 foot plus players just being positioned within that 20 metre part of the field, and it's just going to be an array of high balls being put in. Bear in mind that it applies equally to perhaps even a smaller defender who's an exceptional man marker and can anticipate a kick of that nature, intercepting it, maybe even catching it around the chest or whatever. I mean, they can take the mark as well. So I don't think it's just a license for 6 foot plus players catching the ball above their head. So
yeah,
I think that's,
and obviously,
and
obviously,
have to say,
yeah, go on.
Yeah,
sorry, go on ahead.
No, I was just going to make a point that if there's any of these proposals that has received almost universal support in the sort of 24 hours, if you like, since they've been published, it has to be this mark inside the 20 metre line. Because I think, aside from anything else, what it does is it actually encourages people to look up, kick over a longer distance, and know that potentially could be rewarded.
Yeah, why there was so much approval for that one is because it's my idea, David.
I did see that you're laying the trademark for that.
Well, I am.
I did, No, I think it's, listen, you know, I think loads of people think that they want to some extent, get back to a situation where we can kick the ball over a longer distance and recognise that, you know, if someone's good at fielding the ball in that area, that they should be rewarded. Yeah. The other thing to say about that, Colm, is that, you know, people have said this potentially could slow down the game in that part of the field, that you'll have a succession of, you know, free kicks. Firstly, I don't think we'll see that, in terms of, I don't think, you know, teams will necessarily employ it as a tactic, you know, an out-and-out tactic. It's a sort of almost a you know, an outcome of a particular phase in a game. That would be the first thing I'd say.
Yeah.
But secondly, it is designed to be like a fluid act. In other words, you know, the ball is caught and a player just sort of continues, and you know, that they're not standing around saying like, that was a wonderful catch.
No,
it's a move out to the 20-meter line. Obviously, if it's an attacking player, it's got to go on movement out to that, and then they take a shot at goal. So it's not. It's not an issue of sort of standing around and, you know, everybody applauding each other.
Yeah, and we won't be having to look at free taking routines and all this kind of nonsense out of the mark catchers. They have to kick it too fast. The other quick one was, like, again, this is kind of the worst case scenario of this happening, is a fella catches a mark, he's a bigger man that wouldn't be as adept at kicking, and he starts telling the referee, starts stretching his hamstring, and there's something wrong, and the better player that's closest to him taps. So, you know, it might be at a bit of an angle on his bad foot. What's the situation there? Again, that's the worst case scenario that might happen.
Yeah, exactly. And needless to say, we had identified that potentially as an issue as well. So what we're saying is that the referee, in those situations where a player is either legitimately injured or, you know, potentially may not be injured, that the referee will identify the nearest player to the person taking the mark and will nominate them to take the kick. So it wouldn't be a situation where, you know, a very good free taker would suddenly appear on the scene and would take the kick under those circumstances. The referee will nominate the person closest to that action as the person who's taking the kick.
Maybe another good one for that would be that if a player decides to do that and he's unable to take the free from a mark because of injury, maybe he needs to leave the field and the referee call him back on. You know what I mean? It might discourage somebody trying to play mind games that he might have to go off for treatment and the referee. Just, we'll finish up with the sin bin. I think the sideline kicks is a good one. Obviously, sideline kicks in the game now wouldn't be great, but when you're keeping the more traditional structure, it's perfect. The sin bin, the two yellow cards, I thought was an interesting one, because obviously two yellow cards, now you've got a red. You're given two yellow cards and you just go into the sin bin for 10 minutes. So that's probably the most radical thing in the sin bin.
To deal with the issue, let's say across the piece, I mean, really, you'll know, Colm, that this sin bin has been trialled previously, and again, there was very strong support for it, and when it came to Congress, it wasn't supported, which is entirely, you know, that's the democratic process. But what people are saying is, particularly in the context of the black card, is that, you know, you had quite a number of instances where, you know, people were being sent to the line, and it was being interpreted as a sending off, irrespective of the fact that teams were able to replace it. It was essentially a sending off, at least for the player concerned. And what we're saying now is that, you know, potentially that is a bit too harsh, and what we want to do is recognise that a player would be sent off for that 10-minute period, and that the other team would immediately on the day benefit from that situation rather than having the player replaced. And of course, many people quite rightly have said that, you know, particularly those teams that have stronger squads, for some of those teams, really it wasn't a penalty as such. They were replacing with an equally strong player, so that's been said as well. But essentially that's the thinking, is that, you know, to try and bring sort of a sense of immediacy to the advantage of the opposition team. That'd be number one.
And that's fine. So, like, I mean, I'd say you'd have universal approval of the sin bin being better than the, you know, punitive measure of having to leave the field. But I'm just wondering why you've brought two yellows instead of a red. You're off the field. Why two yellows now are a sin bin? What was the thoughts behind that?
Well, to some extent, I suppose this reflects our desire to try to bring a degree of sort of uniformity to the introduction of these new proposals. So, We also recognise that the use of the yellow card sometimes can be for, you know, whatever people think, for relatively minor issues. So
right.
It would be wrong to say that that, you know, it was a deliberate area that we were looking at, the two yellows leading to the sunburn, but certainly to try to bring a degree of conformity across the piece, that's what we've decided upon. So again, people will know that if a person receives a sunburn and come back onto the field, then if there was another yellow card issued or a black card, obviously, then that is accompanied by the red.
That's accompanied by the red. So I think, my reading into that, are you trying to avoid all this non-stop debate about why it's a black card or why it's a yellow? You know, like, I mean, that the punishment is a 10-minute punishment, but it's not enough to dominate the analysis the following day. You know, like, I mean, it maybe takes a bit of pressure off the referee.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we spoke to the Referees Development Committee. We have to recognise that, you know, these proposals, if they're adopted over a period of time, we have to be implemented by the referee. And so, we have to work with the referees, essentially, you know. So that's really what, you know, that was another consideration, you know.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, just to finish up, how confident are you that these are going to get through? Like, I mean, Congress is a shark pit when it comes to rule changes. Obviously, all going to depend on how well they get through next year's league, if it's decided to go ahead with them. Would you be confident? The question here is, do all five need to come in together? Like, is, you know, the sideline on its own would be terrible. You know, the hand passing thing without the kick out and that kind of reset might not work. Are they all dependent on each other? Do they all come in as a package, or is it?
Well, as certainly, you know, if we were to draw a line between these five, certainly if we were to leave the sun aside for one moment, you know, like this, the four direct sort of rules that apply to the playing of the game, you know, that then clearly there are common things, that the common principles, if you like, that we're trying to move towards, which is, emphasizing the sort of core skills, at least what people have been telling us, the core skills of Gaelic football, the kicking, the catching, and so on, the general principle of moving in to the attack, to talking more about attacking necessarily than defending. So, I mean, what we would say as a committee is that essentially we are just the conduit for the sort of view of the people who will be directly engaging with these rules. So if the managers, if the players, if the officials and others tell us we think all five are a great idea, then that's the recommendation we'll make to the Costabana Sea, the management meeting that'll take place in November, that'll, I suppose, provide that final rubber stamp as to whether all or some will be introduced for the Alliance National League.
Say when you get the feedback and you're talking 55% positive and 45 negative, is that enough to put it through, or are you looking at a really, like, a majority kind of a higher percentage of pro opinions?
No. I mean, you know, obviously we'd like a situation where there was a fair degree of, you know, majority support for if a situation where there's a relatively split decision, then we'll go back to the evidence that has led us to these proposals, and obviously as a committee we'll reach a decision ourselves as to whether or not we want to make the recommendation to Christy Ministry. But, I mean, you'll appreciate, Colin, that until such time as that situation arises, then we couldn't really, you know, speculate in relation to that, but that's how we'll deal with that situation, you know.
Right, okay. Listen, David, thanks very much for taking the time to explain that stuff to us.
Not at all, a pleasure.
We'll talk to you again.
See you, all the best, Colin. Bye-bye.
All right, Conan, so has he won you over? You're sitting there listening intently.
I loved when he more or less said that the kick-out rule doesn't really work, but we're bringing it in anyway.
He didn't say that. That's your way of twisting it.
He said there's no provision for the ball not travelling beyond the 45, so there's no rule, really. I'm not being pedantic.
No. He said there is. Right now, it's a foul. But when I suggested maybe in that situation, he says that can be looked for
a keeper not being able to reach
not being able to reach 45.
I've never played in Donegal before. That is tough to do. I'm not being pedantic
if you don't have a great kick out and you're going from where does kick out from the
13
to 13, that you can't drive that as hard as you can and make it past 45?
Maybe you can. Maybe the minor
goalkeeping's not for you if that's what the,
yeah, but like it's just another sort of little example, and it's not really black and white, which it should be for a rule, especially at this magnitude.
What I thought was impressive is he turned the negative you had about the kick out into a positive and went, yeah, if that's what happened,
I'm saying that teams will win kickouts and there'll be an attack every time,
but that's not necessarily a bad thing.
I think he's sort of misunderstood. I'm saying the team will always win the kickout no matter if it's Moran or because it's too much space to not win it, so then you'll just win the kickout and get a shot away all the time because you're not under enough pressure. That's what I think. So this positive of winning the ball and having an attack, I don't think it'll be good because it just means every time you have a kick out there'll be an attack and it'll just be up and down and up, like, you know, with no real proper
you'll win a kick out with six forwards and six defenders in front of you,
yeah,
which, like, it's,
you should be free when you win it as well.
So you're going to take on a kick pass that could actually be kicked hand passed away,
yeah,
you know?
So it's like just turned the game into 6v6 almost, though. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, and it'll just be like that, it'll just be
on each attack,
yeah.
I mean, that's a concern, but the team with the, like, this is in an extreme example where Noel Merchant is playing. If Dublin play Kildare, it'll still be Feely versus Fenton in a fetching match. Do you know, it depends on what teams play each other, yeah. Listen, teams tactically will have to kind of find their feet on it. All in all, I do think they all have to come in together, or I think that they're a bit wishy-washy. I'd bring all of them in the morning. You'd bring none of them outside of the sin bin and the offensive mark in the morning. I still think the offensive mark doesn't work as well. The thing about the kick out, and this is the really important thing to say, is that this kick out will almost be the end of defensive systems, because there's no way you can reset for every kick out. It's just be impossible. Like, we're almost, with this new kick out rule, you're almost guaranteeing the old traditional structure, and they absolutely can break out into midfield and get and win kick outs. I do think that's a really important part of it. I think the kick out, from thinking, it is the most complicated one, but it has the potential to keep that traditional structure on the game. And if you want to maybe send a midfielder back into a sweeping position, drop a wing forward to midfield, that's fine. But just as long as the wing forward doesn't go too far that he can reset back into the kick outs, you know, so you can still always you can use both your midfielders as sweepers if you need to and bring two wing forwards out into their men and move everyone back. But you won't be able to bring everyone too far back, or else it's just a mess getting back,
yeah,
for the next kick out.
But
you know?
Again, so it's not sort of set in stone what time wasting is. I can just see the messes of this at club level, especially, like, you know, as a referee, how much time is he giving boys to get back up into the six?
Yeah.
Is he really?
I think that if you've gone back into your own 45 and you're tackling, I don't think you've enough time to reset for the kick out. I think the referee's going to blow that up. I think that's what it's the intention of it is that getting back that far is too far to go, so you shouldn't be going back that far. And I think that's what the intention of it is.
I'd love to see that in a club game and see how people reacted.
Yeah, but like, I mean, people always use the club game as in,
but that's where most people play, though.
No, it is, and that's fine. But it's almost like, is the club game that lawless? Like, for example,
one referee is not the same standard. Like, that's the problem.
It's not the same standard, but at the same time, like, I mean, there's loads of rules there that club referees deal with all the time. Like, just because he's a club referee doesn't mean that he's a complete moron. There's moron referees everywhere.
Yeah, I think
it's just another rule. So you're back behind the 45 until the kick is taken. Just like when a throw-in is thrown in, and I've often seen it playing wing back, wing forward, that you might go that bit earlier and you might say everybody's back behind the 45, throw it in, and then you break. I think it's not that hard. That's a set play, so it's really easy to get that back.
Yeah.
You know,
I think it'll slow it down a little bit as well if he's trying to police it.
Anyways, well done to the standing committee on playing rules, and let's hope we see all of these. And that's it. And we'll be back tomorrow. Hopefully, me and Conan will agree. We've Ryan Wiley coming up on the show tomorrow.
He's a great player. We'll agree on that.
We'll agree on something tomorrow, Conan. I promise you. Right, we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
Yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and
They regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.